So you're flying to Italy, mm-hmm. going in people's houses,
correct.
Having mm-hmm. food, mm-hmm. and drinking their product, basically, like, right there.
Pretty much, yeah.
And then, I mean, that sounds like a cool road trip to me.
It is. Right? It is a great road trip.
So have you ever been in someone's house and, like, tasted their wine and be like, nah, this ain't it? Welcome back to the Making Money podcast, where we talk about how to make more money, keep more of what you make, and make your money work harder for you. I am your co-host, Benjamin Foss, and sitting across from me, as always, is the wonderful entrepreneur, business owner, hair specialist, and big-time foodie, Paul Ng. Paul, how are you doing today, my friend?
I'm well, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing great. The sun is shining. It's warm outside. We're getting tans. I've seen people like laying out tanning in their backyards. Like it's summer in Colorado finally.
Exciting. And I avoid the sun like the plague. No suntan, no visits to the sun, period. I avoid it.
Well, I do not recommend trying to visit the sun. That's a one-way ticket.
That is a one-way ticket.
But earlier this week, I was in Breck, and because we had all the rain recently, there's the wildflowers are sprouting, all the grass is green, but there's still some snow on the peaks, and it was absolutely beautiful. But enough about that. We have an awesome guest with us here today, Sheila. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we wanted to bring you on because, you know, we love on this podcast to interview other mm-hmm. business owners, talk to them about their businesses, how they got started in business, and the lessons that they've learned along the way. Many in our audience are also business owners. They're other entrepreneurs or people who are interested in becoming entrepreneurs. So they want to hear about people's journeys and how to get started even. So, mm-hmm. and has Nala is we stopped locking her up so that she doesn't make noise. But I want to rewind the clock a little bit before mm-hmm. we talk about what you have going on now. Mm-hmm. How did you get started in the entrepreneurial space? Did you kind of start in a typical W-2, 9-to-5 job? Like, what was sort of your introduction into owning your own business or the idea of doing that?
I think it all stems in watching my mother juggle so many things. You know, she was a school teacher, not making a lot of money in the Philippines, so she started doing a farmer's market. So I was never opposed to doing my own business, but I did start a 9-to-5 job from college. I graduated with an engineering degree, started working for Texas Instruments, and then moved to the United States and decided that I was going to venture out on my own after a few years. So I didn't go back to Texas Instruments, but I started in the wine business. And then from the wine business, I got poached to oil and gas. And I decided I really like the wine business better, so I went back to the wine business. And but during that time, I was doing like 1099 as a yoga instructor or doing all these MLM companies because I like jewelry, I like pots and pans. So, you know, I'm like, sure, I get 20% off, I'll start a business. And it's just a side business, but now I'm a full entrepreneur. But my introduction is basically doing little things here and there.
Gotcha. So it sounds like you've experienced, dipped your toe in a wide variety of industries, kind of like Paul has, kind of testing the waters. Yeah, I can imagine that the wine industry would be more enjoyable than oil and gas. Oil and gas is very, it's cutthroat, it's dirty.
It is, and it's very cyclical. And so if it's good, it's really good. But when it goes bad, you never know if you have a job.
Yeah.
They lay off people here and there, and then they hire them back when it's good. But it's very, it's like I said, cyclical, and I just didn't want to deal with that. Plus, it's not as fun, like I said, as the wine business. I was selling tools as opposed to tasting what I'm selling in the mm-hmm. wine business.
The tools of the trade.
Yes, nice. Exactly.
I love that. So let's talk a little bit about what you have going on now. So what are the businesses that you are doing now as a full-time entrepreneur?
So right now I have a CBD business. I'm partnered with Paul on that one, called Foxy Flower. It's based here in Colorado. It's Colorado proud. I'm a member of that group because everything is done in Colorado. So that group actually requires at least 50-something percent to be made in Colorado before they bring it into that group. But we're actually Colorado proud 100%. We are
nice
using the farms south of Glenwood Springs. The lab is there. The formulation team is there. The manufacturing lab is there. So everything is actually made in Colorado. So that's Foxy Flower CBD, which is organic and spagyric. And then, well, she will go back, I guess, to that. What that term was. And the other one is Sempre Avanti Imports. We, my husband and I are importers of Italian wine and spirits. And nice. We both came from the business. He was in the import side working for an import company, and I was in the distribution side. So when we got together, and one of, and the company that he used to work for decided to go a different direction, two of the producers asked if we could be their importers. And we didn't, well, I knew nothing about importing, but he worked for an importing company, but he didn't know the back end of it. So I had to start researching on how to become an importer. So everything is basically learned from zero to now. So I had to learn how to register, I labels, formulas for liquor and all that. So it was a fun learning curve.
I think I would say, and like I think Paul can attest to this, I think one of the common themes that we've seen in the entrepreneurs that we have interviewed, and I think even ourselves, is the successful entrepreneurs often have this like can-do attitude and this self-starter mindset of, I don't know how to do this, but I can figure it out.
Yes.
You know, and basically, not letting that starting from zero intimidate you or stop you from taking that first step.
Yes.
And now with AI and technology the way it is, I mean, it has never been easier to learn how to do something. I mean, absolutely. I'm learning how to code and build apps, and I don't know anything about code or building apps, but I'm learning because you just, you have that can-do attitude and you just, you take it on yourself to do that. And I think that's awesome that you did that.
Thank you. I also think that being a business owner, I have to know what's happening. You know, eventually we'll build a team, but I want to know how everything functions to run the business, because if somebody asks me, how is it, I don't want to look dumb that I have to, like, Google it or find somebody else to answer the question about my business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I remember now, because last time you were here, you visited, and I teased you about upgrading to French wine.
Yes.
Or Spanish, no, Spanish wine.
Spanish wine is what you said. Yeah. I'm going to.
I'm not a wine snob. I don't really care. I just like to tease people. But
oh, I know, but I'm going to change your mind.
Hey, I have to say, I love me a good Cab Franc.
Ooh, okay.
I love me a good Cab Franc. Like, it's hard to beat. Just something about like just the richness and the complexity of the flavor. Like I said, I don't know that much about wine, but I know that I love a good Cab Franc.
You gotta start where you like. That's how I started in the business.
Yeah.
Yeah, because my chef at the country club was like, he hired me as an event coordinator when my family and I moved to Houston. And then he eventually just gave me the wine program, and I was like, I know nothing about wine except what I like. And he said, just keep tasting. So I kept tasting.
Just keep tasting.
And eventually I got my certification. But that's how I started. I don't think I ever said no to a good opportunity. I think my answer was like, why not?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Paul, do you have any questions?
Oh, I have a lot of questions, but this is some great intro to where we're going to with this tonight. I'm always fascinated by how do you launch your product that you just decided you wanted to bring in. So wine, all of a sudden, how do you launch it? Because there's so many wine or liquor stores. I'm just going to use the word liquor. So many liquor stores out there.
Yeah.
And now the grocery stores are carrying it and gas stations. So it seems like there's wine everywhere. But how do you launch a product that's already out in the market and make yourself special?
So the way we differentiated ourselves is, well, first of all, we cannot compete with the established distributor or importer, the big, if anybody in listening to this podcast knows wine, the big Gallo's, the big Kendall Jackson, the big Sazakaya, all these brands, we will never be able to compete with them because they've been established. So how we went the other way, because small business owners, small family-owned wineries are underrepresented. So we went that direction. And because it's small family owned, there's actually a niche for it, because most people, especially in the restaurant industry, are so tired of these big guys who it just becomes boring, especially for sommeliers or people who love to taste other wines besides what's in the grocery store or in the liquor store. So we went to these producers. Well, we got launched by two companies that wanted us to import them, import their products to the United States. So that was a good one, because I probably would not have been, haven't been in the business if we were not asked by those people. Mm. So with that, then we said, well, we cannot have just two brands. So we had to go look for other brands. And focusing on what our story is basically to present, to represent underrepresented small family-owned wineries. And we just happened to love Italy. So that's the first place that we went to. And we now have, I don't know how many SKUs, 28 SKUs from Italian producers. But we also went and visited their wineries and broke bread with them, tasted their wine before we even talked about pricing. Because we got to know what we are bringing in. We cannot just bring it in sight unseen or not taste it. Otherwise, it's going to ruin our reputation, because we want to make sure that what we bring in is actually quality at a good price.
So you're flying to Italy. Mm-hmm. Going in people's houses,
correct,
having food, mm-hmm, and drinking their product, basically, like, right there.
Pretty much, yeah.
And then, I mean, that sounds like a cool road trip to me.
It is. It is a great road trip. And speaking of road trip, I think, I don't know how many miles in Italy we logged, because we drove everywhere. North, yeah, south, east, west, middle, coastal. So, yeah, we're there once a year, except during COVID. And I think we have developed a good reputation, because we actually now get calls. I'm like, hey, we heard that you're importing. Can we, can you taste our wine? So we've been, say, sure, send it over and then we'll.
So have you ever been in someone's house and like tasted their wine and be like, nah, this ain't it?
Not really.
Well, that's good.
Because we try to get connected by people who know them first. Because you want to know the person.
So you're getting sort of referrals.
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
It's like, are they good? Is it worth it? And then because...
Because I just thought, like, I just imagine the awkward moment of them,
yes,
like, watching,
exactly,
you in their house. You're like, what do you, mm-hmm, think? And you're like,
yes.
I think we're gonna look elsewhere, you know?
Yeah.
So one of the big sources to find those producers is Vin Italy, which is the biggest wine expo, wine, beer, liquor expo in Italy, and it's once a year. And that's where we found some of them. So you go taste, you find them, you like their product, then you start talking. And then once you start talking and they invite you over and they're like, sure, let's go where, see your facilities are. And that's how we normally, if it's like a cold call somewhat, we go to the Vin Italy. Otherwise, it's a referral from other producers that we already are working with.
Nice.
So that sourcing, mm-hmm, really was a fluke, I guess the only way to say it, is because they reached out to you, and then all of a sudden, that was the catalyst, mm-hmm, to other wineries now,
correct,
wanting you to carry their products.
Yes, for example, so we represent this brand called Serri Per Vas. It's a Amaro gin and vermouth from Trieste, Italy, which is on the Adriatic side, close to Croatia and Slovenia. They just sent me an email. And I was like, well, we're going to be in Italy anyway, so might as well go see them. And then sometimes it just happens that way. So
that is great. I mean, that's, yeah, how one of my product lines came. Literally, they reached out to me, like, literally for a whole year trying to say,
yes,
hey, we want you to represent us. And I kept thinking, well, why? And then one day I just contacted them and said, I would be interested. Send me some samples. And
yeah.
Here we are today, and it's amazing how, you know, an out-of-the-blue email or phone call or some sort of communication, mm-hmm, led to where you're at. I think,
exactly,
it's very inspirational for our viewers and listeners to see that it's not always something you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be a fluke of an email, somebody soliciting, and you never know, is it a real email that's, mm-hmm, legitimate, or is it some sort of hoax or scam or spam? You never know.
Yeah,
but you turned out it turned out for you to, mm-hmm, be fruitful.
Correct.
Literally.
But also, you have to stick to what you're representing. So I get a lot of emails from big wineries, and I look at their portfolio, and then I see that I'm like BCC'd. So I'm like, oh, so he sent the email to I don't know how many people if I'm BCC'd, right? Yeah, because he doesn't want anybody else to see where it's going. So you have to stick with your vision or your mission. For us, we just want small, family-owned. And I receive all these emails that are, you see that it's just a big conglomerate. I'm like, that's not what we're about. So you just need to weed through that as well.
Absolutely.
I want to draw attention to something real quick before we move on, which is that you said those people reached out to you for a year before you responded. And so for those who are getting, who are starting a business and are doing cold outreach, stick with it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Stick with it, because just because someone didn't answer you the first time or the 10th time or the 30th time, you know, eventually you may break through. And it, and that, you know, one of my favorite quotes that I've ever heard around business is from Alex Hormozi. He said, "Volume negates luck."
Yes.
Just keep doing it. Be persistent. Do a lot of it. And like, something will break through eventually.
Yes.
I totally 100% believe that. You know, I feel repetition brings recognition, and recognition brings brand awareness, and brand awareness is what brings you a customer. So those things, it's a food chain, really, which brings me to the next question is your customer or customers, I should say.
Yeah.
Where do you get your next person who's going to purchase from you? Because now you've become the distributor for A, B, and C.
Yes.
Now you have to get this product and get the name out there. So the brand recognition is now the important piece. How are you getting that into the general public's eye, let alone the private sector, who is the buyer?
So, and to answer your question, I'm also going to explain the structure of liquor or wine business in the United States.
Yeah, I would love to. I don't know anything about it.
Yes. So I'm actually an importer, which means I cannot distribute. So when I say I cannot distribute, I cannot sell directly to a liquor store, I cannot sell directly to a restaurant, I have to go through a distribution. That's why it's three-tier. Importer or producer, distributor, and then the
buyer.
Customer.
Mm-hmm.
Three-tier system. It's all about taxation. And tax.
Yeah.
And for me, I have to, before I even bring in a product, I have to make sure that I have a distributor. Otherwise, I'm going to be like keeping it, but nowhere to go, because the restaurants and the retailers will not buy from me directly. So I have to have a distributor already. And then that's when I bring in products and introduce it to the distributor. If the one particular distributor doesn't like it or it doesn't fit their portfolio, find another distributor. The good thing about that is you are not obligated, or the law allows you to have more than one distributor.
And very nice.
Once I have a distributor, then we can bring in the product into the market. And the way I personally do it is I work the market. I don't just let the distributor, and that's also in the entire industry. Most suppliers, and we are called suppliers, importers are called suppliers. Most suppliers would work the market with the distributor rep. So as for me, as a small supplier, the salespeople of the distributing company is like my sales arm. So I work the market with them. With new products, I actually go with them and present it. And sometimes in states like in states where they allow you, not as a supplier, to go taste with the buyer in restaurants and retailers where you don't need a distributor, I go do it myself. And because other states like Texas, they want a technical. They want a distributor rep to go with a supplier rep. So they want somebody to go with me, not me going with them. But I have built, that's where I started wine business, so I can just actually call them and say, hey, you know, can you talk to this rep about my wine, and then I'll go
and get the rep down there.
Get the rep down there myself, or I just go there and talk to the buyer. And I said, well, you know, we can meet somewhere and taste wine, and I can tell the rep what you want. So I work the market. I pound the pavement is what I call it.
Yeah, I love that.
I love that too. Yeah.
Hey, I mean, any business that results in you saying things like, let's meet somewhere and have some wine, is, you know, you're doing pretty well.
Yes, and today I was driving up from Colorado Springs, because Vinmarket is also a Colorado-based business, just like Sempre Avanti Imports, which is my business. We're both local. And they haven't really reached the south of Colorado Springs, or even Colorado Springs. They don't have a footprint there. So I'm like, well, I'll go and create the footprint. So I just opened a few accounts that they didn't have. And that's how you get good in the business. Because
tell me a little bit about this Colorado Springs market. So you're going down to Colorado Springs, and then you're going to a restaurant? Or, I mean, tell me your process once you're in the Springs, because there's no market, you just said. I'm just curious, because that's one of my things is, you know, your branding and your sourcing. So your launch goes down there. Let's talk about that launch.
Yes. So what I do is I normally go to Google or Google Maps, and I would put in the I'm like, okay, you know how you go, like, restaurant near me. Yes. And you put a point where you want to start, and then you're like, okay. So I already have a target on who I want to see. And it's cold call because it's not an open market yet. Well, it's actually open now. But I look at my target, and I also look at what they have. I'm like, is it good fit for, are we a good fit for each other? So it's not, I just don't go to any restaurant or any retailer. I have to make sure that it makes sense for me and the customer. And from that, then I have a list of, okay, I'm going to hit this account, I'm going to hit this account. And when I say account, it's either a retailer, a restaurant, or a hotel, whichever. And that's what I do. And then I go there, and I don't pull a bag of wine and say, hey, let's taste. I actually go in there and say, may I speak with your manager or whoever is in charge of your beverage program? And most people are like, sure. Or most people are like, I am the one. And then you start the conversation there. But that's how I do it. It's I gotta show my face first instead of just a phone call, and then get the information on who's in charge of the beverage program. It could be the manager, the general manager, or there is a designated person for it. And so, then I start the conversation. I get the card. We exchange information. Right. And I say, can we set up a time to taste? And then ask them to set up time to taste, I actually walk in there without saying anything and look at their wine list. Because if I go in there and it's just a laminated red, white, rosé, there's no brand or whatsoever, I'm like, yeah, no, this is not a good fit. So I go straight to their wine list, look at it and say, okay, well, they're just doing the big guys, Southern Grazers or R&DC or Breakthrough or Empire. They're just dealing with these big guys, so it's not a place for me because I'm too small for them. And most people who do that are, I don't want to call them lazy, but they are like set in what they want, and it's hard for you to go through that. And there's a thousand other targets that you can do. So I'm
right. Why waste your time on someone who doesn't want you?
So
true.
And sometimes I actually go online without going, because some of them post their wine list on their website, and I say, I'm like, nope. So that's how I do it. And then I go after I talk to the person in charge, then we schedule a tasting.
So you schedule a tasting. Do you schedule that with a distributor? Or is it still presenting?
If my distributor is in that account, I will tell the rep that I said, hey, I'm planning on presenting to this store. You want to go with me? If you don't have time to go with me, then I'll go by myself. But I will let them know that I'm going. Now, if the distributor is not present in that account, I go there and become the rep and then tell my distributor that that is open. They need to assign a rep and they need to show. So, yeah.
Lovely. I think that's amazing that you have the tenacity, the guts to go down and present to people in a whole market that's not been tapped.
Well, it's yes or no. I mean, they say no and I'm like, okay, thank you. I leave.
Yeah.
You know, and if they say yes, let's taste, and they still can say no to what they're tasting that I'm presenting to them. But, you know, if they say no to the product, then I won't be butthurt because I didn't make it.
Absolutely.
So when you're selecting something to taste or, you know, a couple of things to taste, are you asking some questions up front about either, you know, is there a hole in your wine list that you're wanting to fill? Or like, how are you structuring that?
So thanks for that question. First thing that I look at is the wine list, because then I can tell exactly what they're selling or where the hole is. And then after I have a starting point of my question, then I'll say, are you looking to fill that gap or are you looking for something else that you don't have in your list? Like, for example, Cab Franc, like I said, your favorite. most restaurants, even the high-end ones, either have one or two cup rungs.
Yeah, if that.
If that, right? Yeah. And sometimes the cup rung that they have sucks. Because cup rung has to be well done for it to be really good.
Yeah.
So then if it's a steakhouse and they don't have a cup rung, I say, I see that you have a hole. You don't have a cup rung. Are you interested in tasting a cup rung? Or if it's a price point, I'm like, well, I see that you have $50 and $100. Do you want to fill in between so there's choices? So it doesn't have to be what kind of wine. It's also pricing.
That's great.
Gotcha. I think at this point, I'm really curious, once you get the deal done, mm-hmm. what happens after that? I mean, when it closes, I mean, how do you start getting a repeated order? Or how do you keep that going? How do you keep that momentum with the customer going?
And that's where you build a relationship. In the beginning, you don't have any relationship. So it may take you, what Paul said, it took him a year to respond to that person.
Yes.
My best customer in Houston took me a year to ship a case of wine. But I would show my face. I'm like, hey, you want a taste? You don't? So you got to read the customer that you're walking into. If they are like soft sell or hard sell, then you know how to approach it. And relationship is key to continue. So yeah, it's great that you placed. So they ordered a case of wine. Okay, fine. Boo-hoo. Or what do you call it? Woo-hoo? Anyway, there's an expression. Woo-hoo. Woo-hoo. Yeah.
Now boo-hoo. Now boo-hoo is yes, like sad. Yeah. Woo-hoo is yay. Right.
It's got a part of me. English is my third language, so.
Yay. Fantastic.
I think so, that's great.
Yeah, so you ship a case of wine, and then where do you go from there? And that's where you develop a relationship. If the distributor rep doesn't have a good relationship with that account, then it's upon me to develop a relationship with that account. So whether the distributor rep is there or not, I know that I'm going to say, call that person and say, hey, I'm coming down and would like to chat about what's going on with your program. And if it's not moving on your wine list, let's do a staff training. So I offer my services outside of selling. I do staff training. I even do customer tasting, whether it's restaurant or retailer. So it's all about, after you have your first case delivered, you got to develop a relationship. Because they'll just say, sure, I'll take a case just so you don't keep bugging me. Right? And then now that's when you develop the relationship.
Well, that relationship is also how you get feedback of mm-hmm. like, hey, you know, our customers are not really resonating with this
correct.
Bottle. Could we try a different bottle? Absolutely. Or maybe they want to add, like, actually, this is great. What else do you have?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you being responsive and attentive to their needs, I think, is absolutely crucial in retention.
And also being present. Even if you don't show up every week, maybe every 2 months, depending on how far is it from where you are, where you live, or how big their wine list is, because most small restaurants, they don't move a lot, so they're fine not seeing you every week. But if you have an account that's moving a lot of volume, you gotta be there at least once a week, if not twice.
Do you communicate and maintain the relationships primarily in person, or is there any room in your business, in your industry, for email or just kind of, because you've mentioned mm-hmm. Colorado Springs, you mm-hmm. mentioned Houston, yeah. you mentioned going to Italy once a year. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you were just on the road all the time.
Well, it's easy to get on the, okay, here's what I say. It's easier to say no when it's a phone call or an email.
Sure.
But it's a good introduction. Say, hey, this is me, blah, blah, and this is what I do. If they don't respond after the second or third, it's time to show your face. Or second, third phone call, or if they don't respond, then probably it's better to go show your face, because it's a lot harder to say no when they see you in person. Now, there are other accounts that, you know, you can never click with, and that's fine too. Move on to the next one. You can kind of tell after being in the industry on what kind of person you're dealing with. It could be a person who takes a little longer to make a decision, or it could be a person who just doesn't want to do business with you. And that's fine too. Move on to the next one. But it takes a little bit of understanding the business to be able to discern the kind of person you're dealing with.
Yeah, for sure.
Is there sustainability? And I know the answer to this because clearly. wine and alcohol in general is sustainable.
Yes.
But tell us how you feel at what the market's going to turn into as we move into this new age of technology.
Mm-hmm. I think it's still going to be there because, like you said, people drink when they're sad or happy. But also, some people just enjoy drinking a glass of wine or a glass of Amaro and all that. So it's still going to be there. I have to say, the restaurant business in the early 2000s was all about the big names and the big expense account. It has changed since the early 2000s. It's no longer about the big names and the big expense account. It's all about moving to what is sustainable. How much can you pay? It's kind of, unless you're a millionaire, it's kind of impossible to buy a bottle wine, $100 bottle wine each time you go to dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where sustainability for smaller people like me, because I hit the sweet spot. It's like, there are bottles that is going to be more expensive than others, but we hit a sweet spot between $20 to $70 on the wine list. And that is probably where most people will find more sustainable is the middle price range. Not necessarily middle quality, because you can find good quality in any price point as long as you know what you're looking for. So I think the sustainability in the wine and liquor business is being in the sweet spot of this price point.
Lovely, lovely. I want to kind of move to another sector of this, because this wine is, I haven't drank in 11 years, so my mind is kind of all over with just wine in general. So do you find it where you have only one type of wine that you sell more frequent than another, or I don't know enough about how many labels you have, but are you selling a variety, or is there one that's like, okay, this one sells the most, so we import this the most?
So both. So if within a brand, so each winery have different, you know, brands or SKUs.
Yes.
You can have a winery that has 25 SKUs, and you can have a winery that has 5 SKUs. And within that, you have to figure out which one sells the most, and that's what you bring in.
Mm-hmm.
So within a brand, you have a power horse, and within your portfolio, you have a power horse brand. And it all depends on what account you're going to, what restaurant, what retail shop, what demographic, where the restaurant is, and all that. And that's how you determine which wine works better where. So you cannot really just point to a wine and say, this is the one that works. No, it has to fit somewhere. And it could work for a steakhouse, but it won't work for a sushi place. So each varietal has its own niche.
Mm, gotcha.
I imagine it's kind of like hair with you, Paul, because, I mean, you can look at someone like me or, you know, and based on like, okay, your hair texture is this, your hair is naturally curly or straight, and you want to do this. I think like this is my go-to product for this type, you know, like over time, I think you kind of figure that out and you can kind of, you recognize the patterns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, also, you will know which of your producers are consistent. So consistency is key with anything, including wine and liquor. So liquor is a little different because, you know, it's not as alive as wine. So consistency is key as well when it comes to brands in the wine business. Because if the wine changes with each vintage, meaning each year that they make it, then your sustainability for that particular wine is going to be iffy. So you have to have the good, and each year is different in the vintages. Some years are better than others, depending on the weather and all that contributing factor, which they call terroir, which is French. It's not just the weather. It's not just soil, but everything that has to do with growing the grape or the vine.
Right.
Yeah. So it all depends on the customer base that you're hitting, because Cherry Creek could, I don't know, like Cabernet Sauvignon, because there's a lot of steakhouses there, and then you go to Parker, maybe it's not Cabernet Sauvignon because there's less steakhouses, and most steakhouses are also having like an identity crisis when it comes to wine, because Cabernet Sauvignon has been done. You know, it's been there forever. So most people are still like venturing. Okay, let me rephrase that. If younger generation are much more open to trying new wines instead of somebody,
the same thing every
like
time.
Like somebody who's been drinking buttery Chardonnay from California for the last 50 years, it's going to be hard to
swap them over. Swap right.
So well, and then like even the generation like Gen X or whatever younger than me is not even drinking hardly.
Correct.
At all. So you're having even shifts and not just tastes, but even just the quantity or desire to drink at all.
Yes. You mean Gen Z?
Gen Z. Yeah. Yeah, sorry. Gen X is older. Gen X is older.
That's me.
Because we are Gen X.
Yeah, my bad. I got the wrong letter in there.
It's okay. Yeah. It was a consonant, so you're good. You didn't go to a vowel. Yeah. You're good.
I stayed in the right family of letters, at least.
You're absolutely right. You know, the NA business, non-alc or zero alc, because they're still non-alc sometimes have 0.5.
Although I will say the biggest scam in modern society is these mocktails that cost like $12.
And it's soda water
and it's some juice. Color.
Right?
Yes. It's literally juice.
Yeah.
I'm like, get out of here with this bullshit. Yeah, it's like the alcohol is the expensive part. Exactly. And you're charging the same price. They're making out like bandits, man.
And people buy them left and right.
Just
they are.
Mixing pineapple juice and some like grenadine.
Yeah. I make that at home. I don't have to go
and
buy it.
Give you a splash of soda and call it a spritz.
Yeah. I know. Uh-huh. And it's like mocktail should be half price at least.
At least.
Sorry. That's my rant for
no,
today.
No, it's okay. It's all right. I'm with you on that one.
Right.
Why would I want to pay $20 for a mocktail when I can have my old fashioned?
Exactly.
I know. I was like, well, if I'm gonna pay that much, I might as well like feel something, you know?
Exactly.
Right. So I think at this point, you know, I've learned quite a bit about how the movement of wine. And how you're the importer. I totally had this all backwards. I thought that was like, you're part of a distributor, part of a distributor. And I know you've told me this before, but, you know, it didn't really click until you kind of explained this a little more into detail about, you know, the importer side and how you can't be the distributor, but you can go present it. But then you bring in the distributor in there so that they can get it in there once it's sold. I'm quite fascinated about wine.
It sounds like just such a relational business, because you got relationships from the supplier side, which I know you're but you know, from the people that you're importing from, and then you got relationships with the distributors as well, so it's just like very relationally driven.
It's very relationally driven because it's very tactile, you know, you drink it and it's very
Well, and it's such a saturated market too. Yes. I mean, so many people are making wine or liquor or beer. Yes. I mean, here in Colorado, we have the highest number of breweries per capita in the United States.
We do.
Crazy.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Craft brewery.
Yeah.
Here
So
crazy.
There's just so much competition. Mm-hmm. Anything alcoholic.
Correct.
Yeah. So those relationships are, you know, that can be your differentiator.
Absolutely. You know? And we knew from the very beginning that it's going to be relationship driven in the beginning until we build up. A relationship, and then, you know, a portfolio as well that everybody likes. So it's the wine and liquor business itself is a very competitive business.
Yes.
If you don't have the tenacity to keep going at it, then it's not a business. But the lifestyle is amazing because you get to go to whatever country you want to import with from, and you know, stay in an agroturismo or.
Road trip through the Italian countryside,
exactly,
tasting wine,
and half of your expenses is pretty much free because you get to stay in agroturismos, or they put you up in a hotel, or whatever.
That's amazing.
Lap of luxury,
exactly, and then you eat like kings and queens.
Oh,
I mean. Just think about
it.
Cup franc with
this,
a really
Ben.
Nice Florentine.
Oh,
steak.
Trust. I mean, listen. I've been to Italy and Spain and all over Europe, and I always love being there because I can eat anything and I will never gain a pound.
But we need to do this so we can eat for free and you can drink.
There we go. Eat and drink. Just eat or drink your way through Italy. That sounds like a dream come true.
Yes.
Well, Sheila, it's been so great having you.
I'm kind of
sad we didn't have time to go into the CBD business this time, but maybe next time.
Yeah.
We'll go into that because.
Absolutely.
But I just think it's so cool, and it's such a great inspiration for the audience and for me. It's the way that you started from not knowing anything, and now clearly, after how long have you been doing this?
So I started in 2004, so 21 okay, years.
Okay, so now it's wow. 21 years. Yes. Yeah. Clearly an and expert. And I knew
one thing, Chardonnay.
Yeah.
I started with Chardonnay.
There right. you go. Yeah, and after 20 years, you're clearly an expert in the business and living the dream life.
Thank you. I don't know about expert because there's so much out there, but I know my stuff.
You know your stuff, right? Yes. So you're an expert with what you do, which exactly. is that's what matters. So anyways, for those of you who have watched, we thank you so much for tuning in and for listening. We want to hear from you. Drop a comment down below. What is the question you would ask Sheila about her CBD business next time she comes on? And maybe we'll get to ask
yeah.
all about that.
Maybe we'll have wine while we're talking about CBD.
Oh, we could. We could, yeah.
You can have
it's
wine.
Your show. Have, you can do I'll whatever you want.
Yeah, you'll have we'll give you great
mocktail.
We'll give you grape juice. They can yeah. charge you $15 for
yes,
it.
Yes, with a cherry in there, too.
Yeah, that's the garnish. Expensive. The garnish.
They just put Tabasco yeah. in. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Anyways, thank you all so much for listening. We appreciate you, and we will see you in the next one.